This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Now, we've already heard from Dr. Toews, who is definitely a supporter. But now we are going to speak to, we're going to hear from, I should say, Professor Peter Collignon, who might not be considered a supporter. He's very well informed, possibly a well informed opponent, you could say. So without further ado, this is Professor Peter Collignon of the Infectious Diseases Unit. Thank you. I can't read my own writing here. The Infectious Diseases Unit of the Canberra Hospital. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you. This is often so contentious, I have to use my university title rather than my government-employed title, so I'll just stick to my university one. I actually think it is not a good idea to do this, particularly almost on a routine basis or how it's being pushed. And I actually think this is a very high-risk procedure to take sewage and take the water from that and recycle it into drinking water. And I also think it should be a last resort option and not an early option, and that's my worry. Is the science is being promoted that, look, we can make this safe all the time and really this should be routine. And I also think it's misleading to say everybody else in the world does it because I think hardly anybody else in the world does it. Now, why do I think it's a bad idea? I think it's a really bad option for the environment because of issues about waste, but particularly with energy consumption. I think it's a bad option for people's health because it's an increased risk we don't have to take. I think it's really bad economics because there are a large amount of money that I think is needlessly spent on it. And I think most importantly, if you do need to do this, you have to add adequate testing. And I don't think that testing exists at the moment to give us a surety that what is coming through is safe all the time. It'll be safe some of the time, but we need to know it's safe all the time, and the current testing doesn't allow that to happen. Now, I might say this isn't an argument about water recycling. It's often painted that people are against this, they're against any water recycling. I actually think there's a lot of sensible things we can do with water recycling, and I might say good examples are Brisbane, Singapore, and whole lots of other places around the world where they take wastewater and they use it for industrial purposes. One of the big, I think, slightly misleading arguments with this is that Singapore does it. Well, it doesn't. It has a third pipeline, and all the water that is used goes almost completely for industry, where it's used particularly for their computer chip industry. Less, about 1%, a token amount, gets put into their water reservoirs. And so a lot of this information that comes out, I think, is misleading. I might say the Brisbane plan, I think, was an entirely sensible plan. When they decided to do it is because huge amounts of their drinking water was being used for their power stations, literally a third to half of it. And what they did is they wanted to get the wastewater to go to the power station so the drinking water would be left for drinking water. It was only when Peter Beattie was under a political crisis, I think in 2006, that he suddenly changed that plan to actually say, no, it's going to go into the drinking water. It was done with very little, I think, thing. Now, I think we should only recycle water into drinking water from sewage into drinking water when there's no other reasonable sources for water. So it's a last resort, and when there's testing in place to show that it is safe and you can do that testing in some sort of real time. Now, I might say, if we had no other choice in this city, for instance, we're really running out of water and the only water we can use is sewage, I think the technology that's pushed for this is the best technology and I would be supportive of that. But I'm not supportive if I think there's lots of other cheaper and safer sources of water, and particularly in this community, which I think is the situation. And why am I so much against this? Doctors will probably hate me for this, but the main reason that people are living longer and doing better is not because doctors are good at treating patients. It's because engineers made our water supply safe. I mean, millions of people still die every year from bad water, and it's because sewage contaminates the water and animal effluent. And our biggest breakthrough was to clean up our catchment areas and keep that out of it, and chlorination and other processes to make, and filtration, a few other things. And then the other big thing is vaccination, but we won't go into that. So I actually think this is a fundamental reversal of what has been good public health policy for 150 years. Now, again, not that we should never do that. There may be circumstances where you don't have a choice, but I think it's being done with a bit too much enthusiasm. And these signs are up everywhere. You know, a fundamental is don't do it. And we should only do it if there's any other reasonable options. And a part of that is the options at a reasonable economic and environmental perspective as well. I think we need real-time testing, and I think that's especially for viruses, and that testing currently does not exist. If you want to make water from sewage safe, you've got to have a 10-billion-fold reduction in enteroviruses, which cause the group causes everything from polio to encephalitis to heart failure. And there is no way currently that can be tested in a meaningful, ongoing way, and I'll show you some of the results. Now, is this actually just my thought? This is actually standard policy in public health for the last 120 years. The major review of this was done in the US by the National Academy of Sciences in 1998, and they basically said it should be a last resort option. They didn't say you could never do it, and I agree. There may be circumstances, and in fact in Namibia there is one place that if you don't have the city, you've got no other choice. But that is not true for lots of other places. And, and this I won't go through all. I might say even the Queensland used to have this policy in 2005. This is what I mean. It suddenly changed at a political whim. It wasn't done with a whole lot of things. So this was basically in their thing. Now, I think it's interesting. This was put up, and you might, if you actually look down this bottom corner here, something neatly got cut out of the thing. And I might say this is from Salisbury. I don't know if this is the water we're drinking here, but I might have sort of issues here. So I think there is something. And the other thing is there is big money associated with this. I mean, these are desalination plants that overall cost hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. And I think there are potential conflicts of interest here with large amounts of money being spent on increased infrastructure, which I think is an issue. And this is some of the marketing campaigns here. There's always dams that are empty, healthy looking people and all these sort of things. And it's a technological fix. As Simon said, this is really a desalination. If you're doing, these are desalination plants. Now, there's a lot of controversy about them, about the energy, and I think that is a thing. But it's also this thing, look, nothing will go wrong. We've got all the systems in place. Well, I might mention that when fluoridation was turned on in Queensland after decades of controversy, they screwed it up. I mean, this is so much more complicated than fluoridation, and yet they got it wrong. Now, I, again, don't think we can just say this won't go wrong. Now, reverse osmosis, if you look at the blurbs, is supposed to, and look at that nice graphics that Simon put up. It's a terrific little membrane here. Everything, water can get through, but salts can't, drugs can't, and, they're all bigger. The only trouble is it's a wafer-thin piece of plastic that if you hit it with a semi-trailer, it'll go straight through it. Now, the things is, they leak. I mean, I actually was very unimpressed with those figures where 90% of drugs were removed. Well, they're supposed to remove all of them. And you might remember... Well, I can tell you there has been... I'll give you some figures for reverse osmosis as well. How well do these work? Well, if you look at the figures on salt, they remove 98%, so that's better than your figure. Nitrates, only about 50 to 80%. Drugs like antibiotics, in one published paper, it was 92%. But we have to remove... That's log 1 or log 2, OK? Let's actually accept it's 99%. That's a log 2 removal. If you want to make this safe for viruses, you've got to remove log 10. Now, there's a few... We're log 8 short. Now, it may be viruses are bigger and actually maybe they won't get through as much, but the systems they've got to detect, like organic carbon, can only detect a 1% leak. Now, that actually means you could have 10 to the 8 still going through and you won't pick it up. You can have a very big leak and still have a lot of viruses coming through and you won't pick it up in real time. Now, how much this testing is required? Well, everybody says, look, the rivers in London are polluted. But one of the things I think with this technology, we got it stuck into the wrong end. London has got no choice but to use water out of that river, otherwise they don't have a city. Now, they've put at least the technology at the right end. They don't take their sewage and pump it upstream. They take the water and make it safer before they drink it. What I don't understand in Brisbane, if they really want they'd do this, why don't they put the plant on the Brisbane River and put it through that before they suck it up to the people instead of taking a sewage and pumping it uphill? It'd be so much safer and you'd have better water. And I think some of that's been done because it was designed for another purpose, and then they have another bright idea afterwards. If you really want to do this, recycle sewage, you need a third pipeline. That's what Singapore's got. But this is, in my view, when you want to put it into your dam, it's because you don't want to pay for the third pipeline so you can use the water for putting it on fields and all things like that that everybody would be happy with. And you'd have to do, I might say, a lot less expensive recycling for. The most polluted river in the world has a million times less viruses than sewage. Why would we pick the worst possible water source you can pick of to put in your drinking water? There are so many water sources that are safer. Now, again, that doesn't mean you may never do it, but why pick that as a water source if you've got other choices? Now, this is a very high-risk procedure. It's always put up, look, yeah, it's low risk. This is an additional risk, and if you look at any of these matrices, it looks as the chance of something going wrong versus the number of people who will get sick. And every one of them end up at the bottom saying it's a high, very high risk or a thing. Now, that doesn't mean you'll never take a very high risk. You may have to. But to put this up as, hey, there is no risk to this, is not what every public health matrix says it is. Politicians, I might say, seem to love taking that risk because everywhere you get people doing this. This is direct potable use if you do this. If you take the water straight from the plant, you haven't got all those extra barriers at the end. So if something goes wrong, I guess you'll never know, but it's hard to know if politicians are nauseating whether that's their natural life or not. Now, one of the arguments is we're running out of water. Now, this is a diagram of what happens in Canberra. This is inflows into our dams, not the new Cotter, I might say, but the inflows into our dam estimated back to 1870. And what you can see, they go up and down. And in fact, up here, we're in a drought. What this red line is how much water we use with, in fact, I think level 2 restrictions on it, which is 50 gigalitres of water a year. Now, what I contend, in Canberra in particular, there is no way we need to do this. We need enough storage so we can get by a few years of bad drought. But we have hardly ever got below inflows into our dams, excluding the new Cotter, that has actually got below 50 gigalitres a year. Now, that actually may mean we have to wear some water restrictions, but I think we've got to do that anyway. And the other thing is, one of the issues about this for us, which really irritates me, we have to release more water from our reservoirs so that it goes downstream, is completely captured by the Burrinjuck, where it's almost exclusively used for rice farming. Now, I reckon, on my calculations, two rice farms probably use as much water as the entire 400,000 people in Canberra and Queanbeyan. And it strikes me that's ridiculous. I mean, why should 400,000 people be put at risk if something goes wrong? Why don't we buy up two rice farms and just quarantine that water for our use? I mean, at least when we use it, we put it back in the river. When they use it, it evaporates up into the sky. I mean, that's a separate issue. So there's water allocation. Just to show you rainfall, this again is a Queanbeyan bowling club. We have ups and downs, but there is no good evidence that we are in for a long-term, forever decrease in rainfall. Now, I think we're going to get other 10-year droughts, and I think we have to plan for that. But that actually means adequate storage and adequate, I think, restrictions when you have less, you know. We can't actually have 70 or 80 gigalitres of water used every year when we're in the middle of the drought for 5 years, which was, in fact, the case in Canberra. We had almost no restrictions until about 7 or 8 years into the drought. I mean, I think there's behavioural changes that we have to do. Now, safety reports have been done, and this is the one based on New South Wales Uni that's used for the Queensland Government. The point about these were all based on the National Academy of Science studies in 1998. There have been really no new studies. But what do they show? They show that when you test the water coming through reverse osmosis, you frequently find viruses. These are the membranes that, remember, remove everything except water. They also find, much to my surprise, cryptosporidiosis and sometimes giardia, which are much bigger than I'm surprised they ever get out. Now, I won't go through all of this, but here's the summary. There are only 7 examples in this report. And remember, if we want to make this water safe, we've got to have a log 10 reduction. Well, the sensitivity of their testing, they can only show up to a log 5 reduction anyway. So I guess we don't even know they got that. But of those, they had positive samples, if you look down the bottom, in about 4 of those places. Now, admittedly, they weren't all the time. I mean, you can say 1 out of 142, that's not much. 1 out of 19, well, that's a bit more. 4 out of 25. But you only take one problem to get in there, particularly if your reservoir is a bit low, and you potentially have got a lot of sick people. And the thing is, you don't notice people are sick.
One of the biggest water outbreaks in the US was in Milwaukee. There were 300,000 people who got sick with cryptosporidiosis before they realised there was a problem, and quite a number of deaths. Now, so you know, people just put up with this, if you like, and it's difficult to find. So I think this is a real problem. The very safety reports that say viruses are never there. One more worrying thing, Queensland did some testing of their water last year, which they reported. What I found worrying is, I can't remember, I think they did 60 samples for viruses, and they looked for things called phages, which aren't pathogenic to human, but they're easier to test. Two of those samples were positive for phages. Now, the explanation was, oh, look, that was an artifact in the lab. We didn't take duplicate, but, you know, it wasn't really there. Well, they do the testing for viruses, find positive results, and find some reason why they ignore those results. And I actually don't believe it was a false positive, because if you look at the timeline of those, it was exactly the same time as they got increased bromo or chlorinated bromides coming out at the same time, which also goes with having a problem with your membranes. So I actually think it really does show that viruses occasionally get through. And there's no way they showed there was a log 10 reduction. If you really want to test for viruses, I think you need a PCR molecular test for viruses such as enterovirus and a number of others, and you've got to show at least on a daily basis that you're achieving it. What about in Canberra? I'll just put this up from ACTU. That crimson line and blue line is the difference between having the Cotter Dam and the Cotter Dam and a 20 gigalitre recycling plant. There is no difference, yet we're supposed to spend $400 million for this. You know, their modelling shows if you add a recycling plant and you build a bigger Cotter Dam, it makes no difference to our water security. So I say in Canberra, and this is on the basis that the drought continues forever, I think if the modelling shows it makes no difference, why are we putting people at risk? Why are we spending hundreds of millions of dollars? It just seems to me nonsensible to do this. And the other thing I might say with Brisbane, they currently, if they have full dams, they have 2,000 gigalitres in their water thing. Currently, they're using about 200 gigalitres a year. Even when their dams are at 40%, they have 4 years of water, even if it doesn't rain again. Now, I think these trigger points are somewhat artificial as well. To me, if we're down to 1 year of water and it looks like it's not going to rain, I think, well, we have to do it. But, you know, their trigger points, I think, are set too high. But that aside, the other thing, this yuck factor, it may be intrinsically a protection for us to say, I don't think I'll drink water that might have feces in it. Now, that has protected us for centuries. While we may demean that, the test results show we can't actually believe that all the claims are made are true. The available science says, well, sorry, a lot of times the things don't work. One of the modelling done at Nepean, where they're doing this, suggests there'll be a failure 5 times a year with the membranes. Now, I don't find that very reassuring if we don't have testing that can readily pick up if you've got a 1% leak through your membrane, for instance. So in conclusion, I think this is a high-risk option. I think there are some times where you maybe have no other choice. I don't actually believe that it's done everywhere in the world. I think it's quite different. I think if you've got other options where you've got safer and cheaper water, you should do this. And in Canberra in particular, I don't think we need to take this high risk.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.